We talk about sample size when we don't want to believe something. When we do, we forget that there's a sample size.
You are Locked On Fantasy Basketball, your daily podcast on fantasy basketball. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball podcast brought to you by Basketball Monster. My name is Josh Lloyd and as always you can find me on Twitter at redrock_bball. We're going to be covering a very, very big monster Monday in the NBA where there were 11 games and then preview a very, very small and very light three-game Tuesday slate. So
let's get to it.
Let's get to it indeed. Just a quick shout out to everyone who plays in the Munch Fantasy League. Someone just tweeted me and asked, can I have a shout out to the guys in my league? The guys from the Munch Fantasy League, shout out to you guys. I don't know any of you apart from Aaron who tweeted me. So shout out to you guys in the Munch Fantasy League. What we're going to do today is, as usual, go through the lines of the night, look at all the games from Monday and what it means for our seasonal leagues, and then transition ourselves into DFS talk. And for you guys who play seasonal league, there's still some seasonal stuff in the DFS section of the podcast as well. So make sure you're tuning into that as we break down the three-game slate for Tuesday, which is not all that large, quite clearly. Let's start with the monstrous line of the night.
Can you dig it, sucker?
Ah, yes. The monstrous line of the night goes to none other than Booker D. Devin Booker was huge once more. 46 points for Booker, 5 triples, 8 rebounds, 1 assist, 2 steals and a block on 17 of 32 shooting, which is absolutely amazing. 7 of 8 from the field. Booker has been an astonishing revelation this season. He was the 71st ranked player last year. He is currently the 23rd ranked player, but over the last 2 weeks, he is ranked 9th. In fantasy, averaging 29 points, 5 rebounds, 2.5 assists, almost 3 triples, 0.8 steals and 0.8 blocks. Some of you might think that I'm a Devin Booker hater. I am absolutely not that at all. One of my things that I talked about from him in his rookie year and his second year is that people said, oh, he's Klay Thompson. I said, he's not Klay Thompson. Oh, he's an elite shooter. He was never an elite shooter. Now, an elite shooter. He's shooting at an astonishingly high rate. He's got a true shooting of 58% this year. His first two seasons, he was at 53 and 53.5, both below league average. Taking that up a significant notch, and over the last 2 weeks, shooting at over 60% true shooting. That is an elite shooter. Never doubted that he could become an elite shooter or he could become a great player. Did have some questions with his defensive stuff, and those questions still remain. But in terms of what he's done offensively this season, he has been absolutely astonishing. What we've noticed with Eric Bledsoe moving, I thought that he'd handle the ball a little bit more and get his assist numbers up. Recently, those numbers have dropped. His shot attempts have gone way up, but his efficiency has risen with those to an extraordinary amount, hitting 48% of his shots from the field in those last 6 games with only 2.5 assists, which is down from his season total of 4 assists per game, but just absolutely on fire, almost a guarantee to be a top 50. Well, no, he is a guarantee to be a top 50 player this year, probably a guarantee for a top 40 guy, and you wouldn't be too stunned if he ended up being a top 20 player this season with the way that he is playing. He has taken his game to not only another level, but about 4 or 5 levels higher than that. He has been, I shit on the Suns a lot, and rightfully so, because they deserve it. But I give praise where it's due as well. And Devin Booker's form this season, the way he has played this season, has been absolutely fantastic. Still has things to work on, as do most people who are 21 years of age. Yeah, Karl Anthony Towns is anointed as the next great player in the NBA. He's got a ton of defensive stuff to work on as well, and we'll talk about him a little bit later on. But Booker has been really ridiculous this season. Efficiency way up, which is one of the big knocks on him. The scoring load, the threes, just really, really putting up numbers in a huge, huge way. So if you did draft Devin Booker and got him around that pick 50 or so where he was getting drafted, maybe pick 60, you've come out of it with a huge, huge steal. And he's looked awesome. And I don't really have any reason to think that it's not going to be the case. Yeah, the 44% from three over the last 6 games is a bit high, but he's at 39% for the year. If he finished the year as a 40, 41% shooter from deep, I wouldn't be shocked at it. I'd think he'd probably come back a little bit from the last couple of weeks, but if he was at 40%, I wouldn't go, oh, yeah, that's stupid. That's not going to stick. It's not, it's like, Yeah, Jason Tatum shooting 50% from three. That's not going to stick. Aaron Gordon shooting 45. That's not going to stick. But if Booker came in and shot 42%, I think that everyone would be, yeah, you know what? That makes a lot of sense. He's shooting from two is fine. He's almost at 50% from 2-pointers this season. Really has improved his game a significant amount. So shout out to Booker D. The waiver wire line of the night. This bloke gets it again. Alec Burks of the Utah Jazz. 27 points for Burksy, 5 rebounds and 3 assists, 3 triples and a steal, 9 of 13 from the field. And Booker, he's the 9th ranked player over the last 2 weeks. Burksy's the 16th ranked player, which is just an absolutely astonishing number to me. I thought this guy was cooked. I thought he was finished in the NBA. I didn't think he'd be a part of the rotation. But with the injuries to Rocket Rodney Hood and, of course, Dante Exum in the preseason, it's opened up some playing time for Burks, and he has totally grabbed onto that. Over the last 6 games, in only 26 minutes a game, he's averaging 19.5 points with 4 rebounds and 2.2 triples and 1.8 steals. Now, in saying all that, the 1.8 steals is extraordinarily high for him. The last time he played significant minutes back in the 14-15 season, where he played 33 minutes a game, he averaged 0.6 steals. In 15-16, he played 26 minutes a game and averaged 0.6. In 13-14, he played 28 minutes a game and averaged 0.9. So he is way, way, way above that in terms of steal rate, which is something that is bound to come down. He is also shooting in those last 6 games 58% from the field, when over the course of the last 4 seasons, he's been at 46, 40, 41, and 40% from the field. Now, I understand that his body's healthier and he feels more comfortable finishing, especially around the rim, but he's also not a 58% shooter. So while I was talking about Booker saying, you know what, if he shot 41% from 3 and 50% from the field, I wouldn't be stunned. I would be if Alec Burks continued at 58% and 50% from three with a true shooting of 72. Absolutely flabbergasted if he was able to continue at that rate. Also, the return of Rocket pretty soon is going to impact what Burks he can do. He won't be playing as many minutes as this, but I think you can feel comfortable that he's going to be in an every night rotation role of 20 to 21 minutes. We don't know when Rocket's going to be back. The Jazz do play again Tuesday, so if he is on your wire, perfect stream opportunity for Burksy to add for Tuesday. And we hope that in that case, we hope that Rocket is out. Of course, if you own Rodney Hood, and just if you're a fan of humanity in general, you'd hope that Rodney Hood's not hurting anymore. But Burks is putting up these numbers, which are entirely unsustainable. Now, there are some people like, oh, do you think that he will, you know, supplant Rodney Hood in the rotation? I don't think that will be the case. I think that Rocket is still getting his 30 minutes a night, and you'll see Burks play 20, 19, 18, that sort of the role. I think it's going to have an impact on Ravishing Rick Rubio. Instead of him pushing back to 30 minutes, he might stick at 26 and 25 and then run Mitchell and Hood and Mitchell and Burks together, with Rubio being almost relegated to a ceremonial starter who plays 22 minutes. I think that's a more likely scenario than seeing Burks move back to a 13 or 12 minute a night role. He has been absolutely on fire, but again, these percentages and the defensive numbers just will not stick. I can 100% guarantee you that they will not stick, so his numbers will tumble. So you can add him. It might be for one game. It might be for 2 games. It might be for a week that you get a level of production, or at least a level of usage and playing time, that is equivalent to what he's done over the last 2 weeks. But that's unlikely to stick, and it's unlikely to hold as we move forward. So that's always something to pay attention to. It's something that I do try to teach you guys when looking at these performances. Why is it happening? And will it continue to happen? Booker? Yeah, sure. Burks? Yeah, there's a few things that are working against him. And when I say this, it's never to say it won't happen, although I can 100% guarantee he won't shoot 58% from the field. That's a guarantee. But it's the likelihood is that he's going to lose role, minutes, usage when Hood returns. And that's 90% likelihood. There's a 10% chance that he might not, and he might stick in a 30-minute role that Hood's playing, and then Hood goes to a 19-minute role. I think that's unlikely, but there is a chance. But if you want to play the percentages of probability, Burks goes back, the shooting regresses, the steal numbers drop off, and he becomes a guy who then struggles to be a top 200 player. And I think that's a more realistic expectation for him. But he's been balling out. Congratulations to him. From all reports, good bloke, good guy, and deserves this after the couple of years of just shithouse luck with the knee injuries. So shout out to Alec Burks for that big performance. The young gun of the night, Benny Simmons, 20 points, 8 rebounds, 7 assists, and 6 steals. Simo was 9 of 18 from the field, and he hit both of his free throws. Talk about guys who have been a surprise this year. He's the 36th ranked player, so far this season, averaging 18, 9, and 7 with 2.3 steals and 0.8 blocks, shooting 50% from the field. Has not hit a single three-pointer. I think, let me just quickly double-check. Yep, has not hit a single three-pointer this year. He has 0 of 8 from the field from 3, but it doesn't really matter. He's still putting up numbers. His true shooting does need work because his free throws are so poor, 57% on 5.5 attempts, and that he is a definite punt free throw guy. It is almost impossible for you to win free throws with Ben Simmons in your lineup because of the 5.5 attempts from the line he has taken. But positive signs today, hit both of his free throws, and he has been a monster to the level that I could not have anticipated that he was going to get to this level of production. And hey, I think he's an all-star. I think he's absolutely going to be an all-star, and he has been, you know, sensational, much, much better than I think pretty much anyone, maybe except for Ben Simmons, could have predicted. The dud of the night. I tell a man's not hot. Avery Bradley. 3 points, 1 rebound, 4 assists, 1 of 9 from the field, and 1 of 1 from the line. A lot of people were pretty interested in Avery Bradley heading into the season, looking at him as a top 50 type player. I was not one of those guys because I was adamant. And if you listened in the preseason, if you don't listen in the preseason, do it. I feel like I dropped some pretty juicy nuggets in the preseason of things that I'm thinking about. And I said it multiple times. He will not be able to get the same amount of rebounds he got playing in Boston than what he got that will he get in Detroit. Last year in Boston, he averaged 6.1 rebounds per game. The previous seasons before that, 2.9, 3.1, and 3.8. This year, 2.6, playing against Andre Drummond. We've got a litany of history of guys going who have been good rebounders and going alongside Drummond and having their rebounds drop significantly. Two names that immediately spring to mind are Ersan Ilyasova and Toby Harris, who in their time in Orlando or Ilyasova with Milwaukee, they'd put up decent rebound numbers and could be Ilyasova was a guy that'd get 20 rebound games playing for Milwaukee. Come to Detroit, 6 rebounds, 5 rebounds, and Avery Bradley was going to have that same issue, and that's happened. But what's also happened is his shot has completely disappeared. He's the 191st ranked player over the last 2 weeks. He's 101st over the course of the season, but 38% shooting in his last 6 games and just 24% from three. And like Alec Burks won't shoot 58% from the field, I'm pretty confident that Avery Bradley won't continue to shoot 24% from three or 38% from the field. So he is due to come up. He is being dropped in some leagues, and I understand that because the recent performance has been pretty piss poor. But unless you're in an 8-team league, I think that Bradley is a must-own guy in 12s and a must-own guy in 10-team leagues. And this recent production, the minutes are there, and that's something we talked about again with Timmy Hardaway at the start of the season. The minutes are there. The shots just aren't falling, and that's sort of how I feel for Braddles. But don't base your expectations on A, what some other people may have anticipated in the preseason, or what he did for Boston last season. Those expectations need to be reset. You need to look at him as a guy who is a 90 to 110 ranked type of player who gets you 16 points with 3 rebounds instead of, you know, some people were thinking he was going to be an 18, 19 point guy with, you know, 6 or 7 boards, you know, similar to what he did last year, but taking on the extra usage and going through the roof. And yes, his usage is up an extra 2%, but it doesn't really matter when you're shooting nowhere near as well. And then those rebound numbers, which inflated his overall rank last season, have come back to where they really should be or where you could reasonably expect them to be. So Braddles hasn't been great for Detroit, but he's not losing minutes. He's not losing role. He's not losing playing time or anything along those lines. And he still should be owned, in my opinion. Didn't mean to click that button. Meant to click this one. We're going to start looking at the games now, all 11 of them from Monday. There's tons of that, and make sure you stick around to listen to the 3-game preview for DFS later on in the show. All right, let's take a look at these games from Monday. As I said, there's quite a lot of action happening. 11 games, lots of stuff all around the NBA. The first game we look at is the Orlando Magic and the Charlotte Hornets. The Magic, fresh off a victory against the Knicks, they couldn't match it with the Hornets. Nick Vucevic, the Dwight Howard versus Enes Kanter defensive difference was pretty stark here. 10 and 8 for Vuc. Still had 5 assists, had 2 steals, had 2 blocks. So it wasn't a complete write-off, but it wasn't the 34-point explosion he had against the Knicks. Lord Alfred Payton's strong run continues, 11-4-7, while Simo, the other Simo, Johnny Simmons, 15-6-1 in 34 minutes. The usage, it's at 21%, and still that 3% lower than what he was doing coming off the bench, and he shot at 58% here. And again, the usual caveats with Simmons applies. That line looks good, but he's not going to be a 58% shooter most nights, and when that doesn't happen, he doesn't do much else. He still should be owned in 12-10 leagues. As Gordon had 14-6-3, the threes again for the second consecutive game, did not fall, and that's going to be a more common occurrence as we move forward. Still no John Isaac, unfortunately, but we had Wes Iwundu get into the rotation here, play 6 minutes, and he looked all right out there. Definitely, I'd rather him play than Aaron Aflalo, who's just, again, just a big ball of nothing the majority of the time that he's out on the court. For the Hornets, Kemba returned just like exactly where he was before, 29-2-7 with 3 steals and a block, and that pushed Michael Carter-Williams back to the bench, and he played 14 minutes, and it pushed Malik Monk back out of the rotation. I don't think that Monk is an extremely high-ceiling dynasty type of player. He wasn't a guy that translated super well coming out of college. He probably will have a couple of top 100 seasons at some point, but I don't think that he's a top 20 or top 30 type upside player. And I think his overall fantasy value is a little bit inflated, although I am encouraged by the fact he's playing point guard and starting to develop an ability to get some assists, and that will really help him in the long run to get some potential top 50 upside in his future. Dwight, 12-9, wasn't his best game, but he's been fine this year. While Nick Batum, 11-11-5, but the most encouraging thing there, I think, is 37 minutes. The 1 steal, 1 block is nice. The percentages were pretty poor, and that dropped his overall rank for the day down. Jez Lamb, only 22 minutes, and this is where we have to be careful. 12-2 in 22 minutes for Jez. The minutes with Batum playing 37, Jez is going to be around this 22 to 25 minute role, and if he's not shooting at that high 40s, 50% mark, is he going to bring enough in other areas? He's been super impressive this season, Lamb, but in this reduced role with Kidd Gilchrist and Batum locking down 30 minutes at the 2 and the 3, or the 3 and the 2 respectively, I think it's going to be pretty hard for Jez to maintain the rank of 58th overall, which is where he currently is. I think that we're going to see him fall outside the top 100, and you should still hold him, but I do think that he is going to drop back down. So just be aware of that as we move forward into the season for Jez Lamb. The New York Knicks and the Indiana Pacers, just an absolute destruction from the Pacers over the Knicks. The important information here, Tim Hardaway, the stress injury in his leg. We still don't have a timetable. Mark Berman of the New York Post was speculating. He spoke to a doctor speaking about injuries similar to this. You know, 2 weeks to 2 months. 2 months is shithouse, obviously. But we've seen how long it's taken Seth Curry to return. Shit, he hasn't even returned yet. Bradley Beal, Drew Holiday, they've missed plenty of time with this sort of injury in the past. So it is definitely worrisome for Tim Hardaway Jr. Owners, Kristaps Porzingis, available to return, but can't play the next two games. So again, there's some really real fishiness going on with all of that. With him out, Mick Beasley started, played 14 minutes and got into foul trouble. And coaches need to piss off this bullshit of, oh, he's in foul trouble, we need to sit him. What was the point of Michael Beasley playing those minutes, playing well, scoring, being the only Knick who could hit a shot? He was 13 points in 14 minutes and then sitting on the bench, oh, because we've got to preserve him for later. Well, you didn't have to preserve him for later because you got your ass kicked, you got your pants pulled down, and you got someone with a cricket bat to really smack you across both buttocks. And by the time that you were ready to bring him back in, the game was done. Players generally, unless their name's Marquise Chris, they're generally smart enough that when they've got these fouls, they can play a little bit more cautiously and they can keep themselves in the game. You know, restricting the only guy who was hitting any shots because he got two early fouls to sit his ass down and then not play him at all for the game is just an old school mentality that really needs to go from these coaches. Because it was such a blowout, Bill Hernan Gomez into the rotation, 14-10 in 17 minutes. Even Joakim Noah played 8 minutes. That shows you how much of a blowout it was. Those guys won't play every night. While Damian Dotson, the replacement for Timmy Hardaway, 9-7, 2 threes, 2 steals, 1 block. He is a guy that looked interesting in terms of his projections and his fantasy translations. If you're in a 20-team league, I'd add him. If you're in an 18-team league, I probably wouldn't, but I would watch this space because the threes can be there. 7 rebounds is nice. The defensive stuff, he can be an okay guy. And he was one of those players when you look at the translations, you go, Damian Dotson, what's he doing there? But yeah, he came out fairly high. So he's a guy to pay attention to. Frankie Ntilikina played 27 minutes and had 2 of 11. If you are stashing him, I don't think that it's really a high upside proposition to stash. We saw some big assist games and steal games earlier in the season, but I'm just not confident that he's going to play 30 plus minutes or that he's going to be a potential top 50, top 60 sort of guy, which is if you're going to stash someone, they're the sort of players you stash. You don't stash a guy that's going to be 110th post All-Star break. Not really much point in that. Everyone's minutes. Courtney Lee under 20, Enes Kanter under 19, just shitful from the Knicks, shitful in its entirety. Onto the Pacers, the same story, except they weren't shitful, they were brilliant. but that meant that everyone's minutes were limited. We had no one play over 30. Oladipo had 16, 5, and 4 with another two blocks. The Deuce Young was strong. Daz Collison had a double-double with three steals and two blocks. Boyan hit three threes for 19 points. Miles Turner was strong. Sabonis double-doubled. It's just a whole bunch of good performances from these Pacers players. It's just a shame for our fantasy point of view. They didn't play 33 or 34 minutes because they really could have put up some big, big lines, but not a huge amount to take out of it in terms of looking forward for fantasy value. The next game we look at is the Phoenix Suns and the Philadelphia 76ers. Now, I've praised Phoenix. I've praised Devin Booker. I am not anti-Phoenix. But this center bullshit rotation, you have a go, you have a go. I think it's confirmed. I think we have to confirm it. Yesterday on the podcast, I said, going by past history, Greg Monro will be a DNP CD in this game. Greg Monro was a DNP CD in this game. It has been a legit pattern. Len misses a game. Monro misses a game. Chandler misses a game. Len misses a game. Monro misses a game. The Suns play again Tuesday. Tyson Chandler just played 37 minutes. I reckon I'd take anyone's bet that Tyson Chandler won't play on Tuesday. And we haven't heard that as yet, but I would almost guarantee you that Tyson Chandler will not play. Greg Monro will go from a DNP CD to starting center, and the whole bullshit just continues. And that's why owning any of these guys, Len, Monro, Chandler, who knows what's going to happen? The Suns have until Wednesday to work out what to do with Mike James's contract. So maybe they're going to buy out Greggy. Maybe they're going to look for a trade to execute. But they need to clear a roster spot if they want to keep Mike James around. And maybe they don't because he played 5 minutes in this one. So who knows exactly what they're going to do. But there is some sort of resolution to this situation potentially occurring on Wednesday. But and again, people said to me, they've got to make sure that they're not limiting their minutes and playing them there to showcase for trades. And if you are a new listener to this podcast, showcasing for trades is the biggest load of shit I have ever heard in any of my existence anywhere. If you are an NBA GM and you do not know what Greg Monro is as a player, and then you make a trade for him based on one game where they showcase him and you go, who's this guy? Greg Monro?
As Greg runs in, we realise this could get dangerous.
Oh my God, Greg Monro just played 30 minutes. They gave him 30 shots and he had 25 and 15. Give him to me. I need him for every draft pick that I've got. If any GMs do that or are influenced by one game, they're stupid. And in saying that, some of them are stupid. But it is the most asinine thing I have ever, ever heard of that you need to showcase a player for a trade. Because if everyone's talking about it, then surely the other GMs go, well, they're just showcasing him for a trade. And if you don't know who the player is, then you're a dickhead. I'm sorry, it is as simple as that. You are a dead set dickhead. And I don't think it could be any clearer. This rotational, everyone gets a go bullshit is bullshit. It's even stretching to the point guards. Tyler Ulis, who you think has got some future in this organization, not as a starter, but as a long-term backup, played 37 minutes in this one, 12 points and 12 assists. And you go, Josh, how can you complain about him playing 37 minutes? Well, I'll tell you why. Because it had been like four games in a row where he hadn't even cracked 25 minutes in a game. Because Mike James would have to play 28 in one of them. And just the constant back-and-forth bullshit of nothing making sense. Give Ulis 30 minutes a game. But I don't think that they will. He'll probably play 22 in the next one. And James will come out and play 28. In this one, they went point guardless for 6 minutes. And that's fine. Play Booker in that role. Play Booker next to Warren and Jackson. Do it. Try it. Who cares? For as good as James has been, he's a 27-year-old European veteran rookie who realistically is not the future of any team. He's not a contributor on a good team. He's not a... When this team is going to be good in 3 years' time, he won't be good. I don't see the point of it. Ulis is fine for 12-team leagues, but he's not a must-own guy. Marquise Chris... Yeah, cool. 3 and 6 with 2 blocks in 23 minutes continues to be the most infuriating player in the NBA. Well, Dragan Bender.
Bite my shiny metal ass.
4 blocks, 3 threes. He's never going to be a big stat stuffer, but I really do like the way he plays. Give him 30 minutes a night. Play him next to Chris. Just see how that works. But nah, this team. Man, they are frustrating. As for Chandler, 7, 12 and 4, 3 steals and 2 blocks. A sensational performance. He can absolutely be streamed in. But one out of every 3 games, apparently, he's just not going to play. And holding on to that is just not going to be the best course of action. TJ Warren continues to be very, very good. 25-8 with 2 steals. On to the Sixers. This is a disappointing loss for the Sixers at home against the Suns. Embiid was great. 22-12 with 4 blocks. And probably the more important part here is he played 34 minutes. He should be a top 10 player from here on out, while Bob Cove had 10, 6, and 5, and Šarić had 10, 9, and 4 in his 33 minutes. No Rashawn Holmes. Give it up if you're still owning him. That's cooked. Amir Johnson played the 14 backup minutes, while Jared Bayless was shitful, 6 points in his 22 minutes, even without Markel Fultz and Timothy John McConnell. Let's go on to the next game. It's Milwaukee and it's Boston. And how many more rants do you reckon I got in me? Big Jason Kidd. But you know what? Maybe I'll ease off, because Brogo played 32 minutes. And this is 100% what should happen every single night. Now, it did take a Jason Terry calf injury, which I am certain will keep him out of games, for Brogdon to get that, and Dellavedova to be out. But it happened. 10-2-3 for Brogo, and also required them to go without a center, with Thon McCur playing 8 minutes and the Muppet John Henson playing 21. So by my calculations, that's 19 minutes without an actual center on the court. So playing with Giannis at center, and then Middleton, and then Bledsoe, Snell, Brogo, and then just a sprinkling of Liggins and Terry in there. And that's totally fine. I can understand getting away with that, especially against a team like Boston, although Boston played decently big with Bainsey out there for 15 minutes. As for the Muppet, he won't go 0 of 6 all that often, so hold on to Johnny Henson. Tone Snell dropped in 3 triples, while Bledsoe had 18. And I probably should mention that Chris Middleton was great, as was Yanni, who had 49-4 on 58% shooting and went to the line 14 times, which is a problem with him. But when he hits 12 of them, it's a pretty bloody good result for your fantasy team. So the Bucks, they don't get the victory because Jason Kidd is really a bad, bad coach. There's going to be more bad coach talking about later on. Don't worry about that. And the Celtics, Al Horford, 29-8, a block. Brilliant, just really fantastic. And Kyrie had 32-4-1 with 2 steals. Another good night from him. But Jason Tatum, this dude just doesn't miss. I talked about his regression. And people go, man, well, Josh, look at that. He went 4 of 5 from 3. And when I say that and then someone comes out and has an even better shooting performances, it makes me look stupid. But I think we all understand that he won't be literally the greatest shooter in NBA history. As a rookie, he won't be. Very good shooter. Very smooth, but this stuff is going to come back. 17-6, no other numbers for Tatum. He is a must-own player, but there will be a level of regression, but he should never, ever lose minutes to Marcus Morris, who continues to be shitful. 3-6 in 24 minutes. The team looks much better with either Vanilla Tice or Bainsey out there, and I would much rather them run that than Morris. Morris is suited to a 24-minute role. That's all he is, and he is not a 12-team league guy. Jaylen Brown was really pushing Avery Bradley to get himself a league-leading, I think, 5th dot of the night. Didn't happen. 8-7 in 23 minutes with some early fouls. He'll be better than this, but he has had... it's been a bit of a roller coaster, I guess, owning Jaylen. While Marcus Smart only had 8 points, but added 3, added a steal, had 7 assists and 4 boards, just contributing in those other categories like he pretty much always does. The Brooklyn Nets and the Atlanta Hawks. The big, I guess, takeaway here is Jarrett Allen. 21 minutes for Allen, 11 points, 4 blocks, a steal, and 1 rebound. I had someone go, why is he getting so few rebounds? He's not a great rebounder. He was never a really good rebounder at Texas. Now, some of that was to do with him playing out of position at the 4, but he's not an awesome rebounder. But look at the guys ahead of him here, and we look at his path to minutes. Tyler Zeller, Quincy Acey, Trev Booker, Tim Mozgov, who's no longer ahead of him. I think Allen is one of those guys. We talk about stashability. If you want to stash a rookie, Allen's the guy. There's Nil Aquino, who's that option. Fultz, potentially, if he's around on your wire. But Allen's that guy with no one ahead of him. At some point, he's going to play 26 a night or 25 a night, you know, get 2 to 3 blocks per game, 12 points on high efficiency, and be a useful player. The other guy that you know I really like that struggled early in the season, but it's turning it around, Caris LeVert. 28 minutes for LeVert, 17-2-7, 2 steals and a block. I'll tell you now, I think he's better than the Blue Swimmer. I've said that plenty of times. His game at the start of the year, he was never going to continue to shoot whatever he was shooting, 40% from the field and 20% from 3. That was never going to stick. And we're seeing it turn around now. His ball handling has increased. He's the backup point guard, getting some defensive numbers. I'm not saying that he is a 12-team league ad at this point, but if he was playing 30 minutes a night, I would be all over him. He's got a very, very sexy fantasy skill set. And in fact, over the last 2 weeks, in only 27 minutes a night, he's a top 100 player. He's averaging 12, 4, and 4.5 with 1.5 steals on 46 and 67 and still just shooting 30% from the field, from 3, sorry. So room for improvement. I wouldn't feel, if you showed me a roster that had Caris LeVert on it in a 12-team league, I wouldn't say it was a bad decision. He is trending in the right direction, and he is playing very, very well at the moment. Rondo Hollis-Jefferson moved back into the starting lineup, 16-10, business as usual. Spencer Dinwiddie, 13-5-6, and Damari Carroll 13-8-4. The blue swimmer got ejected. Alan Crabb 8-4-2 in his 23 minutes. He is definitely a guy to have value in 12 team leagues, but it mainly comes from threes and some scoring, not a huge amount else. Remember, his 9 cat value is extraordinarily influenced by the turnover category, so don't just solely ever look at rank, because he is going to be really inflated by those turnovers, and that does give that value a little bit of it's a little bit misleading, I think. The Hawks. Jonto Bembry, man, another one of my boys. He's coming through 13-3-2 with a triple one for him. 27 minutes for Bembo, while Marco Bellinelli, 19 minutes. This is what I envisaged in the preseason, that Bembry would come for Bellinelli's minutes and potentially come for Kent Bazemore's minutes, because I don't think Bazemore's all that good. And in fact, in this one, Bembry played more than both of those players. He's not a 12-team add yet, but the fact that he hit a three is encouraging to begin with. He can get assists, he does defensive stuff, and he's a high-percentage finisher at the rim. He is an interesting watch list guy, and he is a 16-team add for sure, and probably a 14-team league guy as everything trends in his direction. They started Miles Plumlee and Ersan Ilyasova. Ilyasova had early fouls, so that limited him to 20 minutes. Of course, it did. 5-2 with 3 steals for Ersan. Not a must-own guy. He had that one big game in the last two, pretty subpar. While Luki Babbitt in 16 minutes did nothing, and Miles Plumlee scored 1 point. Torian Prince, the artist formerly known as, not a good night from Princey, 6-6 in 28 minutes. People go, should I drop Torian for Burks? No, is my answer. I've got one guy here, Torian, who's going to get 30 minutes a night, pretty much guaranteed every night moving forward. So I'm okay with that. Burks, yeah, you get a week's worth of action from him, a game's worth, like who knows. I would rather keep Prince. It is definitely a lean patch for him, but I would still be hanging on to him if I owned him, which I believe I do. Dennis Schroeder, 19-5-4, a strong night from him. He has pretty much lived up to any expectation you could have had. Well, Bazemore, this was a good Bazemore game, to be fair. 13-5 with 2 steals and a perfect 6-6 from the line. Let's move on to the next game, the Cleveland Cavaliers and the Chicago Bulls. The Cavs looked very sluggish early on. That didn't last that long. They ended up winning by 22. Kev Love only played 23 minutes and had 24-13. His usage will go down when Isaiah Thomas returns, but for now, he has been fantastic. LeBron was great. 23-7-6, while Dwayne Wade continues to just assault the box score. 26 minutes for Wado, 24-6 on 69% shooting.
Giggity.
I think Wade's a fine 12-team league owner. I would probably own him over Burks at this point, despite Burks being a top 20 guy at the moment. I feel confident, more confident in Wade retaining at least top 100 value for the next 3 or 4 weeks as I do opposed to Burks. Jay Crowder had 9 points in 21 minutes, but I think he's going to lose some significant playing time when all these guys come back. Thompson, maybe Rose, Isaiah Thomas, those sort of players. The Plumber, not a lot to really see there for J.R. Smith. Jose Calderon made another start. Jeff Green had 14-8.
My name is Jeff.
But, yeah, they're not really guys to consider in most fantasy leagues. On to the Bulls. Everyone was really ready to write off the hammer Denzel Valentine after last game. Nwaba came back. Oh, no, that's it. Nwaba's come back, taking his minutes. Yeah, not so much. 30 minutes here for Denzel, while Nwaba played just 16, and that's the perfect minutes distribution. Now, when Zachy LaVine comes back, that's going to have an impact on the hammer as well. But I think if you did own Denzel, I wouldn't be just dropping him like he's hot. I'd be keeping hold of him, and I'd just be seeing how this works out. Literally, so many people, man, hammer's gone, hammer's done, he's done, he's done, he's done, after one game from Nwaba when... And Hoiberg pulled some trickery and, you know, and played those 23 minutes for Nwaba. I'm pretty okay with Denzel. Look, he's not a must-own guy by any stretch, but if you got him, I'd be more inclined to hold. Punchbob Shiploke played 27 minutes, 10-9. Remember when everyone was trying to tell me he was a must-own guy? That's blatantly false. 31 minutes for Chrissy Dunn, 15-6-5 with 2 triples for Dunny. He is a must-own guy, while Lauri Markkanen had 13-7. And I must give a shout-out to Justin Holiday. Just continues to be an absolutely atrocious shooter, but takes the shots. 14-6, 3 triples, a steal, a block, and 3 assists. Very good performance. Needs to be owned. Will likely take a significant hit when LaVine comes back. When LaVine comes back, he's not coming back and playing every night. He's not coming back and playing 30 minutes a night. He might when you get to the All-Star break. But through January, I'd be stunned if he averaged 30 minutes a game in January. Stunned. We'll see. I think a January return is looking more on the cards for LaVine than it is any time before Christmas. Jaren Grant, only 13 minutes because he is not good. The Golden State Warriors and New Orleans Pelicans, what a just batshit crazy game this was. Kevin Durant, Boog Cousins ejected at the same time. Huge comeback from the Warriors after being down big in the first half. And then right at the end, Steph Curry rolled his ankle.
Oh, no!
Yep, it did not look good at all. Now, x-rays were clear, but again, x-rays only tell us broken bones. So we know that he doesn't have any broken bones. But there is something significant happening there. He is almost undoubtedly out on Wednesday, and you would have to think the rest of the week is cooked for Curry, and I would say next week he is out at least. I reckon you're looking at 2 to 3 weeks here based on my semi-educated medical degree that's got nothing to do with sports training or having access to the results, but I reckon you're looking at a three-week absence here for Steph would be my guess. Let's see how that works out. Draymond had 19, 9, and 7 with 4 steals and 2 blocks. And Steph was brilliant here before getting injured, 31, 5, and 11. Now, back to Steph. When he missed the last game, Pat McCaw started, and Pat McCaw looked good. So Sean Livingston, you might think, oh, he's the guy to add. I reckon Patty is the guy you want to do, but it's not a must-own 12-team situation. It's not like Steph's going to be out for months and months, I don't think. He could be. He could have a massive, huge tear through his ligaments that are going to take months to heal. I don't think that'll be the case, but it is possible. In that case, you would add McCaw in all leagues. To me, he's more of just a deeper league guy. He copped a smack across the nose in this one and was bleeding and didn't return and only saw 4 minutes. But they're not going to extend Sean Livingston, who was suspended in this game. They're not going to play him 32 a night. They just won't. They'll play him 22, 20 minutes a night, and they'll let McCaw run those minutes. I think they'd be pretty happy with what they saw from Pat McCaw in that last start when Steph sat out earlier in the week. Iguodala returned, had 4, 4, and 7 with 3 steals. And when Steph's out, McCaw moves into that point guard rotation situation while Uncle P will get some minutes and become a 3-point streaming option. Again, everyone really going for the old Dutch rudder on Jordan Bell. This is why. Now, I love Bell, and again, I'm not criticizing him at all. I am a bigger fan you'll find of him. But he was just never going to be this top 100 person that people were really getting excited about. 12 minutes in a game that Zaza Pachulia was out of. He had played 12 minutes and had 4 points, 1 rebound, and a steal. If he's in a 16-team league, sure, you add him. In a 14-team league, sure. He has earned a David West-type role where he will play 12 to 14 minutes a night, nearly every night, unless Draymond Green goes down. I think he's an every night part of the rotation, but that does not mean that he is a must own 12-team league guy or heaven forbid a 10-team league guy. He is not that guy. I can tell you now, his value on Basketball Monster is inflated by a high field goal percentage and by the block numbers, which have been really, really high. It is inflated by those numbers. But it doesn't mean that he's a must own guy when he's just got these really huge positives, especially the field goal percentage and everything else giving you nothing. It's a more of a, hey, let's add and see how it goes. Not a must-own player. On to the Pelicans. Anthony Davis. The MRI results were good. He's day-to-day. And I don't know what it is about this guy. And I will never call him a pussy because he's not a pussy. And he would kick every single person's ass that listens to this podcast. But there is something about his body that's either in sensitive nerve endings or adamantium bones or super healing processes. Because he gets hurt and it looks terrible and it looks shit. The mechanism of action looks terrible on these injuries. And you go, man, he's done. Like groin injury, non-contact, in trouble. And then 2 days later, he's fine. He's just got either super healing, super fast healing powers, or he has extraordinarily sensitive pain receptors at the time. But I think it's more the healing, to be honest, because the injuries look like something bad happening. And you go, shit, I've seen that injury before, and it means weeks. I've seen it before. This looks terrible. 2 days later, he's back. There's just something about it. But he's back. He's going to be fine. Unbelievable. Jrue Holiday's unbelievable run continues, 34, 6, and 4 with 4 triples, while Rajon Rondo is playing much better without Davis, 10, 5, and 11, but Davis will be back, so Rondo will go back to more, 6, 4, and 6. Is that going to be worth it? Maybe, but he is still worth a hold. Darius Miller got the bulk of the minutes with Davis out, 9 points with 2 triples, while Dante Cunningham had 11 and 9 in his 32 minutes. Of course, we're looking at those guys as deeper league plays, and Miller is a short-term streaming option. Of course, it always makes sense when you've got a young big you can develop and Davis is out. Why wouldn't you play Sheck Diallo 8 seconds? it's always you got to do. You got to exhume the corpse of Omer Asik to play 12 minutes against the Warriors, who you don't need a big center against. But of course, let's trot Asik out there for those 12 minutes. Even though Asik was, I think, a plus 7 or so in those 12 minutes, if Asik was entrenched as a starter, like if he was a starter on this team, played 20 minutes a night, and he was playing against the Warriors, he'd go, you know what, he's going to get played off the court and played 6 minutes. In a game where he's not in the rotation every night, then he gets added in for more minutes. Good old backwards logic Alvin Gentry added again, it is easier to play a player more minutes off the bench than it is when you start them, according to Alvin, the only man in the world who thinks that way. The Minnesota Timberwolves and the Memphis Grizzlies, I told you there was going to be another shit coach around, because Tom Thibodeau is not a good coach. He used to be a good coach. He is not a good coach anymore. He is not in the top 15 coaches in the NBA. He's not a bottom 5 coach. He's probably not a bottom 10 coach, but he's not a good coach. And you can criticize me all you want, best defense, won a ring, Team USA, whatever you want to say, he's not a good coach. The defensive liabilities that this team has are stark and they have not improved. The offensive system is piss poor. And now some of the blame goes to Karl Anthony Towns, but having a system where Karl Anthony Towns takes 6 shots while Taj Gibson takes 11, and mind you, 6 shots in 38 minutes, something needs to change. Now, I've got no problem with Jeff Teague hogging the ball, because he didn't. He took only 6 shots and hit 5 of them, and I'm okay with that. But I don't need 10 shots from Jamal Crawford. I sure as shit don't need 17 shots from Andrew Wiggins, who's regressed significantly in the last couple of weeks. Towns is one of the more gifted offensive players in the league, especially big men, and he's just not getting the ball enough. Now, he's passive himself. Now, some of that is, I would have to think, I think he's worn down. I think he's mentally worn down. This is pure speculation, but this happens to a lot of players that play for Tom Thibodeau, is that you just get constantly ground down by this madman, crazy person screaming on the sidelines, and that's 2 hours. Imagine all the other times I reckon on the bus he's screaming at them. In practice, calls them up on their phone. Townsy, get to sleep! It must just do your head in. And he'd just be like, if there's kids listening, close your ears. Towns must just go, like, fuck this guy, just shut up. That's what I'll be thinking, like, just shut up. Like, this is not normal. On top of that, these minutes are out of control. Nemanja Bjelica doesn't play. And then Shabazz Muhammad out of the rotation. And you know what? You know who signed Shabazz Muhammad? Or you know who signed Buzz? Thibodeau. Didn't need to sign him. No one else was signing. Brought him back in. We've got to bring him back. Doesn't play him. 40 minutes for Butler. 37 for Taj, 38 for Townsie, 36 for Wigo. And you lose to a Memphis team that had lost 11 in a row when you're supposed to be this team challenging for the top 4 in the West? Putrid. This playing of guys big minutes is going to bite him in the ass, and it is going to bite him in the ass in a massive, massive way. His coaching is already poor at the moment. It is going to bite him in the ass. And this might be controversial for me to say this about Thibodeau. He is not a good coach at the moment. And this team is in disarray, and they better figure it out. As for Towns, I've said this plenty of times on the podcast. He might get it figured out. He might, and he probably will. He's still a top 10 player this season. But in a head-to-head league, when you combine it with the Wolves' shit playoff schedule, if you can get Anthony Davis back, Boog Cousins back, any other real top 10 player back, I would do it. I would get them back. If you took Towns at number 1, I feel sorry for you, because obviously that's not going to be the case this year. I think in the one-man mock draft I did, I checked that today on Basketball Monster, where I took him at number 3, which I had Giannis at 4. I would have taken Giannis clearly ahead of him now. But if you took him at 1, it's not looking great for that return on investment. But if you can get something back, I would be looking into it. Onto the Grizz. Tyreke Evans, the minutes restriction doesn't appear to be one anymore. 16, 5, 9, a steal, 3 blocks. It's ridiculous. Mario Chalmers, short-term value is done. 20 minutes for him. It'll go back to being almost unplayable when Mike Conley returns. And the guys replacing him in the rotation, Benny McLemore, 18 minutes, putrid. Dylan Brooks, 9 points in 28 minutes. Good on-court player, shithouse fantasy producer. Well, Jim Ennis had 13 points in 26 minutes. Really deeper leagues at best. Deontay Davis showed what he can do fantasy-wise. 11 minutes, 6 points, 2 blocks. He's intriguing long-term, but he's got a bit of the Marcus Chris's about him, which is never a good sign for a big man. While Marc Gasol, 21-7-5, was pretty strong. Now, I guess in Towns' defense, when you play against Marc Gasol, it can be an issue, but DeGasol's not quite at the level defensively as what he has been at the past. And it's still really unforgivable that that sort of performance could be out there. The next game, the Denver Nuggets and the Dallas Mavericks.
Nice, Gary!
Gaz, 43 minutes for Gazza, 21 points, 3 triples, 4 assists, 3 steals. After a somewhat quiet start, he is humming at the moment, while the Blue Arrow, the same thing, only 28 minutes, but he had 22 points with 4 triples, a pretty empty stat line in the rebounds and assists, in fact, very empty, but a steal and a block, and like so many of these other players, he was never going to continue to shoot 24% from 3. He was at 58% from the field in this one. He was 4 of 8 from 3, and this is more in line with what we should expect from the Blue Arrow moving forward, and he should be owned everywhere, as should Farton Will Barton, who started the second half over Mason Plumlee, 23, 8, and 6 for Barton, with 4 triples in that game. While Wilson Chandler returned, he started, only played 27 minutes. He's not a 12-team league guy, I don't believe. While Ken Fareed, I reckon you can consider Fareed. 13 and 11 in 28 minutes. I'm not a massive fan of his, and when Jokic comes back, he'll see his minutes reduced. But it's been a solid run of production for Fareed. Trey Lyles had 7 and 6. He looks not dead, as opposed to how he did last year. While Wancho had 5 and 2 in his 12 minutes. More of a deeper league guy at this point now that Wilson Chandler is back. As for Mason Plumlee, he only played 19 minutes. Got hacked early on. Was 1 of 6 from the free throw line. Had 3, 7 and 4. But I'm not... Carlisle's notorious for the hacking. So I'm not sure that that will necessarily be a long-term concern for Plumlee, and he should go back to getting minutes in the mid to high 20s and be a useful player while Nikola Jokic is out. For the Mavericks, Dennis Smith, the best thing I can say about Dennis Smith here is he played 31 minutes. He'd been trending down, but 31 minutes, 20 points, 5 rebounds, 3 assists. He is the player who's got top 50 upside written all over him when we get to February. Yeah, big, no one's taken the minutes away from him. Yeah, long term, he's has a little bit of a reduction lately, but this is a real positive sign for him. Yogi Ferrell, a nice game, but he's just 7 of 9 shooting, unreplaceable or unreplicable, and won't be continuing in that sort of minute load, while the pencil had 22 and 10. Maxi Kleber, another start. Of course, we're just looking at him as deeper league play. Well, JJ Barea only played 19 minutes, but 9 assists and 2 steals. That gets it done for 12-team leagues, and he can be owned in certain situations. But of course, he's going to be your worst player, so you can move him on for streaming-type targets. But he has been very impressive this season. The Detroit Pistons and the San Antonio Spurs. I'm glad the Pistons lost. Sorry to all Pistons fans, because these last-minute tricky starting lineup changes, oh, we better put Anthony Tolliver in to start instead of Stan Johnson, they didn't win. But in saying that, the Pistons starting five hasn't had a great net rating. They put Tolliver in to match up against the Spurs bigs. Didn't really do that much. 5-3 for Tone, while Stan Johnson still played his 30 minutes and had 14-10 with 2 steals. If it's handled incorrectly, it can be a real negative issue. Hopefully Van Gundy handled it with Johnson fine. And I imagine Stan is back in the starting lineup for the next game, but he is not a standard league sort of a player. Drummo had 11 and 15 with 3 steals. Shout out to the Pistons fans who believe that he is a better defender than Joel Embiid, and that no GM in the entire NBA would choose Embiid over Drummond. One of the more asinine and literally certifiably insane statements that I have ever read on any fan website ever. So shout out to you, whoever wrote that absolute crap piece of propaganda, whatever that bullshit was. It was astonishing in his ridiculousness. Toby Harris, another strong game, 15 and 5. While Reg Jackson, 34 minutes for Reggie, 27, 4 and 3 with 2 triples on 57% shooting. He has been unbelievable this season, a real steal based on where you drafted him. Now the Spurs, Aldridge was back, Gasol was back, Dan Green was back, Rudy Gay was back, Manu was back, Pat Mills was back, Tone Parker was back. So the box score looks completely different to the last game. Gay started, 32 minutes, 12, 10 and 4 with 2 blocks. So what this says to me is a couple of things. A, that he is fine enough to play those minutes, but just that they think Kyle Anderson's better. So that's going to be interesting for Gay's value when Anderson and Kawhi both return. Speaking of Kawhi returning, he did a press conference today, and I would have to think that next week is a realistic expectation for Kawhi to return. We don't know that for sure. And Kawhi, when you're coming back, I'm coming back when I'm coming back. Cool. Thanks, man. I would think next week's a realistic expectation. But the fact that Gay can play these minutes and he hasn't been playing these minutes makes me think that they just have him below Kyle Anderson in the rotation. And Anderson, I thought 8 weeks for him with a sprained MCL was a realistic expectation. They're saying 2 weeks, which just seems incredibly short. and he's going to come back at a similar time to Kawhi, and it'll be interesting what happens for Rudy. You can add him short-term, sure, but long-term, I'm just not sure that any sort of value there sticks. Tone Parker, 7-4, deep leagues only, while Millsy, 11-4-3 with 3 triples, is just a deeper league guy. But nice from Davis Bertans to throw his hat into the ring to become one of those elite 3-point streaming options. Another 3 triples for him, but can he stick ahead of Joffrey Laverne, who didn't play in this game due to that, or maybe due to that finger thing, or maybe due to the fact that he's not that good, and Bertans showed a little bit, but he's not going to be a big enough role player, Davis, to be an every night part of all big minute rotations. The last game, just an absolute disgusting performance from the Washington Wizards. To only score 69 points, it's good because I get to do this.
Giggity!
But it's just putrid to get absolutely smashed by the Jazz, who, unbelievably, are in the top 10 in offense in the NBA and the top 10 in defense, and have the number five in net rating. David Locke tweeted out some ridiculous number today. They are just crushing opponents, just killing them unbelievably. And I can't believe that they're doing it. It is astonishing. The Wizards were just killed in this one. Tomas Satoransky outplayed Tim Frazier again. He 100% to me is better than Frazier, and he should be the backup point guard when Johnny Wall returns. I'm not Scott Brooks, and I don't really have his email address to give him my thoughts, so I'm not sure that that'll be the case. But deeper leagues, I want you to look at Tomas, at least for the short term, but it might stick. Bradley Beal has been disgustingly bad without John Wall. The goggles didn't help his shooting. 4 of 15 for 11 points. He was close to getting the dart of the night. We went with the other Bradley Avery, but he was real close to that. While Oubre had 11 points in 28 minutes and Markieff 11 points in 22. Both of those guys can be 12-team league players, Markieff and Oubre, but neither of them are must-own. On to the Jazz. The return of Rudy Gobert. 21 minutes for Rudy. 4 and 10 with 2 blocks. He's back, but the biggest thing I took out of this, and this is something that I'd been speculating about, is that Derek Favors is the backup center now. So Derek Favors starts at power forward. 3 minutes into the first quarter, he came out, and he played basically all of the minutes at backup center until this game was completely out of control. Then Epe Udo came in and played 8 minutes late. So what we're going to see is Jonas Jerebko remain in the rotation and Udo out. Jerebko played 30 minutes for 6-5 with 2 triples, and so 20-team leagues, you're going to want to own him. I think he's going to have some value. And I think that's going to be the end of Udo as a regular part of the rotation. Ravishing Rick, 4-5-4 with 2 steals. I would still own him, but it's not looking awesome. While Don Mitchell, 21-3-2 on 62% shooting. Just insane efficiency for a rookie. As for Favors, only 25 minutes, 9-8. But I think that, look, he's going to play more than that on most nights, but I think that's a realistic expectation of a similar lines. And he won't, if when we get to middle of January, I don't think that he's going to be a must-own 10-team league guy. I would still hold for now, see how it all plays out, but I would expect him to not be a must-own guy. Thabo Sefolosha suffered a knock to the head, and we'll see if he is ready to go for Thursday's action. That does it. There was a ton to talk about. As I mentioned, I'm going to take a quick break because I need a drink. And then we're going to get in and we're going to talk about the 3 games that we've got coming up on Tuesday for DFS. But before we do that, we're going to play a song by Big School, and it's called I Pay My Taxes. I'll be back for DFS in a sec. Guys, we're back talking perfect DFS for Monday on FanDuel. Kemba Walker 53.9 and Daz Collison 44.8. Devin Booker 63.1 and Alec Burks 40.5. TJ Warren 43.1 and Royce O'Neal 33.4. Yes, Royce O'Neal. Didn't even talk about him in the breakdown of the Jazz. That's how unimportant I think he is. But he had 11-7-6 with a steal and a block and 3 triples in 25 minutes. Not going to stick, of course. Benny Simmons, 55.1, and Draymond Green, 56.3, while Tyson Chandler, 41.4 for a total of 431.6, and that cost $49,800 on DraftKings. Burks at 41.25, Drew Holiday 50, each one more, 39.5, Draymond 53.25, Chandler 37.5, Steph at 58.75, Booker at 64.5, and Jim Butler 48. And that's a total of 392.75, and that cost $49,800. Dollary doos. All right, let's get into these three games we're going to talk about for DFS. The first one of those is the Phoenix Suns and the Toronto Raptors. I am labeling Tyson Chandler as doubtful for either rest, for back-to-back, or for bullshit center rotations. So I don't think that Chandler will play. There is no official word on that, but don't be surprised to see Greggy Monroe start.
As Greg runs in, we realize this could get dangerous. Yeah.
Dangerous for my sanity, watching the Suns games, in fact. For the Raptors, we know that Bebe Noguera is out. Now Jakob Poeltl is questionable. He was dealing with an illness. If he is out, that's really going to open up minutes for Serge, for Pascal Siakam, and for Jonas Valanciunas. So there might be some DFS value in all of those guys if Poeltl happens to sit. The Raptors are favored by 13.5, and the total is 224.5 at point guard. Freddie VanVleet, 4,100. He's going to get 20 minutes. I think he's a pretty decent chance to get you 20 points here. So I like him in this great matchup and in this potential blowout and the small slate. As for Lowry, 8,500, probably won't return 5x value, but the pricing's tight. There's low scores going to abound with only three games on, so I like Kyle at 8,500. Tyler Ulis, on the other hand, $4,000. We'll crush that today. But will he be 22-minute Tyler Ulis, or will he be 37-minute Tyler Ulis? Who knows? No, literally nobody knows what Phoenix is going to do. So he is a tournament guy. But on a three-game slate, you could lean a little bit more towards him in cash. I don't think that you're doing much for Mike James is really worth looking at. At shooting guard, DeRozan at 8,700. I like it for cash, but I like Devin Booker a lot more. 7,100 for Book. 63 points today, averaging 40 over his last five. Feels like a pretty much guarantee for 40 points most nights for Booker. Norm Powell, no. The Jedi, OG Anunoby, 3,500. Just not putting up any sort of fantasy stats. While CJ Miles at 38 is only a GPP option, whereas I like TJ Warren at 6,800. He's shouldering a stack of the offensive load. That's a $500 price drop for Tony Warren Jr. So I do think that he is worth a look for this Suns team that just doesn't have many other offensive options. At power forward, Siakam at 48. Look, Poeltl is out, I like that opportunity there for Siakam. More minutes for Ibaka at center, and he could push towards 30 minutes. So that's a good opportunity. While Ibaka at 5,200 hasn't been awesome, but at 5,200, I feel pretty good about Serge getting me at least 26, 27 points in what is a good matchup that could see him play extra minutes. Marquise Chris, I'm just not going to do that. At center, Greggy Monroe, 4,500. I'm listing him as a GPP guy because I think he's back in the rotation. And I think he's going to start, and I think he's got 26-minute potential here. So I think that he is absolutely worth a look as a 27 to 28-point upside guy. But, of course, the floor is literally zero, so not a lot to love for a cash situation. While Jonas Valanciunas, if Poeltl is out at 4,900, Bebe's out, so he is going to have to play more minutes than Dwayne Casey will feel comfortable with, and that will allow him the opportunity. Because when he plays, the numbers are fine, and he's going to have that 30-point opportunity here in this game. As for Alex Len, he's a GPP option as well because we just don't know what's going to happen with the Suns. He could play 29 minutes, he could play 17 minutes, he could play 0 minutes. But if he plays those 29 minutes, he can bring down some rebounds, block some shots, and be a DFS option for sure. Over on DraftKings for tournaments, I like Greggy at 4,500, I like Jonas at 48, and I like Siakam at 3,900. And for cash, there's a bunch of cash guys I like here. Tyler Ulis, 39, Fred VanVleet at 34 is strong, Ibaka at 5,000, Tony Warren Jr. at 64, Devin Booker at 8,000, DeMar DeRozan at 85, and Kyle Lowry at 87 all have cash value. Over on DraftKings, the next game is the Utah Jazz and the Oklahoma City Thunder. No spread out for this one at this point. We don't know if Rocket Rodney Hood is going to play. We don't know if Thabo Sefolosha dealing with a potential concussion is going to play. We also don't know if Rudy Gobert is going to play on a back-to-back. It's not like he extended himself significantly against the Wizards, so I think another minute load in the low 20s would be expected for Rudy. But if he sat out, don't be surprised at all. At point guard on this slate of games, Russ Westbrook at 11,000. Very, very hard. Actually, that's DraftKings. I'll talk about him in a sec. Russ Westbrook at 10,700 on FanDuel is very hard to ignore. Now, the Jazz defense is cranking. But Westbrook's got a decent record against them, so I think getting a 55 out of him, it shouldn't be an unexpected result, and I think he's a strong play for that reason. Ravishing Rick at 5,300, just not happy with that. Fat Face Ray Felton or Harl Netto, not a lot for me to love with either of them. At shooting guard, Robinson, no. Don Mitchell, 7,200, more of a tournament guy. Look, he was okay today, but only had 25 points, which isn't quite enough. But again, remember, we're talking about almost a 50-point win for the Jazz, and that limited his minutes. As for Rocket Rodney Hood at 5,500, if he is in, I am in on that. That is a great tournament play for Rocket if he is playing. But of course, we don't know that. While Birksie at 4,800, he's averaging a ridiculous 44 points over his last three games. If Rocket's in, that's tough. If Rocket's out, I love Burks at 4,800. At small forward, Paulie George, 8,600. I think he's more of a tournament guy than a cash player at this point. Ingles and Cephalosha, no interest. And Josh Huestis, the same. At power forward, I like Mallow at 6,800. Overall, this game's not great for DFS, but I like Mallow in this one at 6,800. Jeremy Grant, meh. Jonas Jerebko at 39. If Gobert's out, Jerebko at 39, I think is a decent cash play to get some of these bigger price players in, like your Ross Westbrooks. Well, Derek Favors at 7,000, of course, he is a guy I would use if Gobert is out. If Gobert is in, I think it's fade time. At center, Stevie Adams, 6,900, probably a little bit too expensive against a Gobert Favors-led front court, so he's a fade. Well, Gobert's at 8,000 and not while he's on minutes restrictions. That is just too high of a price to pay for Big Rude. On to DraftKings for tournaments. Mallow's at 65. Don Mitchell's is at 71. And for cash, you've got Big Steve Adams at 59, a much more suitable price for Adams on DraftKings. Paulie George is at 85 and Russ at $11,000 over on DraftKings. Let's get stuck into the last game of the night. It is the Washington Wizards and the Portland Trailblazers. They'd want to have a real bloody good hard look at themselves, the Wizards, and bounce back after that piss-poor performance. The Blazers are favored by 6, and the total is 203 points. We know that Johnny Wall is out. Interesting quote from Terry Stotts today, say that Al-Farouq Aminu is clear to play more than 30 minutes. In the 8 games before his injury, when Noel Vonleh wasn't healthy, he only played 30-plus minutes in 4 of those 8 games. So I think that expecting him to come out there and just play 30 every single night is probably an unrealistic expectation, despite Stotts' statement, because if he wanted to play him 30 every night, he would have done it before he had the guy who was their starting power forward in the playoffs last year, Vonleh. So I don't think that he is an absolute lock for 31 or 32 minutes. At point guard, I like Dame at 9,100. I like him quite a bit here, actually, with real 55-point upside and probably a 40-point floor, which is strong, strong for cash. Shabazz Napier, 3,700. Coming off some, yeah, a really big game, 34 points in that last one. I would only look at him for a tournament play. Well, Tomas Satoransky is now at 5,300. That's just too high, and I don't really see the upside there. At shooting guard, Beal is at 7,600, just been putrid recently. I think that people will be off him, so that then I'm on. I think it's a great GPP differentiator. While CJ's at 6,700, I think a lot of people will go CJ, and you can set yourself apart from Beal, assuming that he remembers how to actually play basketball, because averaging 20 points over the last three has been not good. Pat Connaughton at 36 is also a GPP option. The small forwards, Otto Porter, 7,000. Poor game from him today, but I'm ready for him to turn it around in a higher usage role. Evan Turner, no. Kelly Oubre is GPP at 5,100. For power forwards, I spoke about Aminu, but he's at 4,600, so I think that he is a GPP upside guy. But since he's returned, he's played 26 minutes a night and had 13 points. That's half a point a minute, which is just not good enough. It's nowhere near cutting it. And I don't love him as cash. I think his floor is actually shithouse, to be honest. Markieff Morris, I'm not into. Well, Noah Vonleh, tough to see me relying upon him. At center, it's Yusuf Nurkic. I love him at 7,400 here. Has been putting up some decent performances. The last one was pretty shit, and he's a little bit up and down, but I don't mind this matchup. Whereas if you want to go GPP centers, I think Gortat at 4,700. He could play 30. He could play 21 minutes. He could have a donut like he had today, or he could put up a 14 and 14 double-double. That makes him somewhat of a GPP type of center. Over on DraftKings for tournaments, it's Connaughton at 36. It's Oubre at 49. And for cash, I like Tomas Satoransky over there, 4,100. Aminu's at 42. Porter's at 69. McCollum, 7,000. Nurkic, 72. Beal at 76. And Dame at 9,400. Let's now wrap it up by looking at the other sides here. Start with Yahoo. For tournaments, I like Siakam. I like Valanciunas, Satoransky, Miles, and Connaughton. And for cash and tournaments, it's DeRozan, Lowry, Beal, Nurkic, Don Mitchell, Mallow, Steve Adams, Serge Ibaka, Oubre, Van Vliet, and Ulis. on Moneyball. For some reason, my picks are not coming up. I thought they were there. But, oh, well, we'll get back to that in a sec. Let's talk about draft stars. I thought I had them prepared, but they're gone. I'm gonna wing it here for Moneyball. On draft stars, you've got for tournaments, Beal, you've got McCollum, you've got Valanciunas, Satoransky, Ulis, and Connaughton. And for cash, we've got Robertson, Van Vliet, Siakam, Aminu, Tony Warren Jr., Adams, Porter, Mallow, Don Mitchell, Nurkic, Paulie George, and Lowry. And let's go to Moneyball now and see what we can find out, assuming that this brings it up on the screen for me correctly. No, just by the way, I've had no internet at my house for the last 3 days, and it's really beginning to piss me off having to use mobile data to watch games. It's going to be a pretty hefty bill until they fix this internet up. So hopefully that comes pretty soon after this killer storm that we had across the weekend here in Melbourne, with rain for about 72 hours straight, lots of floods, that sort of stuff. But everything was okay apart from my internet. On Moneyball, I like DeMar DeRozan a lot. We'll start with the cash and tournament guys together. That are useful for both. DeRozan, I really like a lot. I like Van Vliet. I like Serge Ibaka. I like McCollum. I like Kyle Lowry quite a bit for that, and I like Dame Lillard. Yusuf Nurkic is also a strong cash play, as is Devin Booker. Tyler Ulis at 4,000 is probably worth a squeeze too, as is Russ Westbrook. For tournament, Gortat, I think Porter is also worth a look. He's a little bit higher priced on Moneyball. Paulie George, Ulis, Devin Booker's a cash guy, as I said. Greggy Munro is a tournament sort of a player, as is Pascal Siakam, Al-Farouq Aminu, and Freddie Van Vliet, along with Jonas Valanciunas. So some Moneyball options there. Don't forget to subscribe to this podcast and give it a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. And you can find it also on Google Play, TuneIn, Stitcher, and on Spotify. And if you are watching on YouTube, give it a thumbs up, give it a subscription, click that bell, and leave a comment underneath. And of course, check out the rest of the Locked On Podcast Network and check out Basketball Monster. And while you're at it, check out LockedOnFantasyBasketball.com, where Adam and John have put up a couple of great articles for you to go and check out. We are done here, guys. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya. Quinn Snyder.